Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. As I promised in the previous segment, we were going to get into some of these interviews, and I also promised in previous segments that we'll get into marketing. We're doing a little bit of both. We spoke a little bit about the overall news and what we want to kind of focus on moving forward, because there are way too many accidents or way too many things that are going on to actually be able to talk about them all. But we will also, because I know a lot of people jones for the need to know news, and I hope that if you're jonesing for need to know news to hear it from me, you should be signing up for G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. I'm only giving you little snippets here and there of things that I think that are really, really relevant to what we're trying to do here. I think you can do the same thing, and I think you'll appreciate getting more insights. If you're looking for a news fix, just sign up with G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. You know, there isn't a newspaper out there that we all agree with, and there's a few times where I'll actually, you know, take a different position or provide an alternative to G. Edward Griffin's views, but still, it doesn't matter. What he is providing is awesome. It's far better than the New York Times, where I disagree with almost everything. So you'll never get people to completely agree on all things, but when it comes down to the important things, you know, reasonable people, equally informed, will seldom disagree, especially about the important things. So anyway, I don't have a lot of time. We're going to be getting into an interview with John Durash. John Durash is he's the founder of the National Liberty Alliance. And if you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, that is his organization. And they talk about a plan. They talk about some things. One of the things that in my conversation with him is I believe we're going to actually have a little presence on the National Liberty Alliance web domain so that we can start helping people understand, you know, this concept of the contract, because most people still look at the Constitution as this huge, evolving thing of case law, precedents, and all of these things. And I can't tell you how many times I feel like doing something wrong when I'm dealing with a conservative that actually, you know, takes pride in their knowledge of case law and how all of these things have become what they want to call constitutional. I've dealt with people that call themselves conservatives, but still accept. They agree and they acquiesce to this unlimited concept of a federal government. Are you kidding me? Where in the heck can you get that kind of misinformation? Where can you be so misinformed? If you've read some of the founding documents, once you start reading the founding documents, it's almost like an epiphany. It's almost like you've been rewired to thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this is a definitely defined limited government. Anyway, one of the things we wanted to also provide you is kind of this fact of the Southern Poverty Law Center. They actually refer to him as a wannabe Johnny Appleseed who wants to actually start moving common law grand jury movement as a crusade. And they refer to this as an extreme right of sovereign citizens. You know, here's the indictment against the Southern Poverty Law Center. Sovereign citizens, what are they saying? Are we subjects? Are we actually already slaves as far as the Southern Poverty Law Center is assuming? Because the concept that citizens are anything other than sovereign goes against the fundamental tenets of how this nation was built. The citizens are the sovereigns. We are God is the ultimate sovereign, but on this world, at this point in time, we are the sovereigns over this government. And until God steps in, until the good Lord comes, we are the ultimate sovereigns. And so the Southern Poverty Law Center. I just wanted to kind of read their introduction regarding John Durash. And his name is John Durash, and he is not so sweet dream of an anti-government grand jury is is to plant common law grand juries in all 3,141 counties of the United States. Drash claims that the bogus and powerless juries have the constitutional and, of course, God-given authority to conduct investigations, issue indictments, and remove duly elected and appointed government officials from office. Well, hold it now. Anybody that reads this, you know, and does not agree with communism and the Southern Poverty Law Center's perverse way of trying to make good evil, you would start recognizing these things. Anyway, that would include pesky judges who insist that everyone must pay their taxes, obey traffic laws, and respect property rights. Now, these are all editorializing. There's no citations or anything regarding this. The three facts of American life that constantly get sovereign citizens in law with trouble. And one of the things I actually talked to John Durash about is the sovereign citizen movement. He is not a sovereign citizen person. He does believe that grand juries are constitutional, and they are. As a matter of fact, it is well within the ratification debates, and I promised him I would do some research in pulling out the facts regarding the ratification debates. We're going to be going into break real quick, and when we come back, we will have that interview with John Durash. It's a good 30-plus minute interview, and then when we come back, I'll make some final comments and actually kind of give you a bird's-eye view of where we will be going after that interview, or after today's episode, what we'll be doing with some other interviews and as well as some new marketing. But as I have said, here's that hard break. See, I'm not clairvoyant. I actually have a little thing that tells me what's coming up and how much time I have left. So anyway, with that, we will be right back after these two promos with that conversation with John Durash. And we hope that you listen to every word of this, because this is very revealing. Folks, we'll be right back. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Recording. So we are now recording.
Okay.
And what we also have is kind of 40, I can do like 40 plus minutes, you know, 41, 42 or less, depending on your time. So What I'll ask is I'll try to, when we get close to that 40-minute point, I will just say, hey, we need to probably take a break as we conclude one thought or one part of the discussion. Then we can just take a quick silence, and then I'll have a little pause between there, and then I can cut these things into my radio show, because I've got a one-hour radio show, which really gives me about 55 minutes with intros and so some other stuff. So, anywho, I think that kind of covers how we're going to go down the path of this process. Do you have any questions? Or
all right, well, I'm wondering the format. Maybe I'll talk for 10, 15 minutes, kind of giving an overview of what we're doing, and then maybe move into Q&A, or how do you want to do this?
Actually, that'd be fine. I mean, you can do the intro. I do have some questions and so forth, and I don't like to do rehearsed interviews. I really love the dynamics. I'm not an I gotcha guy. I'm not out to try to hang anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to try to get to the meat of what the real what's the real truth there. And
understood.
Okay. And I did, by the way, do some due diligence in going through the ratification debates. And I did find mentions of, in the Pennsylvania and the Massachusetts ratification debates, discussing the grand jury. So anyway, I'm not sure if you've ever, I didn't see any ratification debate documentation on your website. So anyway.
Yeah, well, we may have covered something like that in our consent for government course, because we did go into in-depth on a lot of things. We did talk about ratification. Okay. I don't recall particularly them discussing much about grand jury, but, we'll take it as it comes. And, as long as, we try to, first of all, we want to just kind of educate the listeners to an idea of what it is that we're doing. So that's why a good introduction, 10, 15 minutes is good, an overview. And then from there, however it rolls,
Okay. Just to give you the background, this is not about rehearsal or anything. I'm in a very hard position with my audience and everybody that the Constitution's a contract. It was a compact written form by the states, just to give you the background of what I'm doing. And that
Constitution is not a contract.
Actually, it is.
Because if you hold the position of, Judge Napolitano, then it's a contract. He believes it should have said we the states.
And it
and
did.
That is a very serious problem. It's actually the Constitution says we the people. We're not a contract. We wrote the law. It is true the states got together to negotiate, to debate, and come up with things. And really it was the people. I mean, if you boil it down, it goes right down to the militia, which are the people anyway. But it's the people who formed that temporary government during that time period of transition into becoming a nation. And in that process, there was no meeting of the minds. Okay, that's the point. The states negotiated how can we create a government that is going to serve the people and be controlled by the people, and the states will have a major say about things. And they did create a beautiful document. It's just that it's misinterpreted many times and it's ignored. But a contract is a meeting of minds. We'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll give you this, we'll give you that. You violate the contract, they can then negate it.
Well,
that's not possible.
Well, so the Constitution in contract law is actually a compact because it has multiple parties. And Article 7 required that the Constitution had to have buy-in. In other words, the term ratification is the acceptance of a contract. Article 7 is clear about that. It gave the sovereignty to the states to oversee that compact.
Well, there's a relationship of power, and there's an agreement of power.
Absolutely. The states were delegated by the people that sovereignty. Right.
Yeah, this is the most important thing. It is the sovereign who wrote the paper. That is the people, not the states.
So actually,
the states make up the sovereign.
There's no evidence of that.
Of course there is.
Well, so hold on.
None of them were elected at the time when they were discussing.
Was there a popular vote in establishing the Constitution?
For the whole Constitution in itself?
For the ratification process.
Well, for the ratification process, yes. But the point
is there wasn't a popular vote. There wasn't a popular vote. The states.
No, but the states made the decisions. The people who were involved created.
There you go. See, you just acknowledged that it was the states that made the decision. It was the states that have the sovereignty. That's why the ratification of the Constitution was required by the states, not the people. And
okay,
the changes.
As long as it's a contract, then it becomes a whole different product. If you're going to look at it as a contract. Here's what I have discovered,
sure.
And it's Jefferson who has put this whole thing together. He is the mastermind behind all. It was him and James Madison that pushed forward the Anti-Federalist in order to get the Bill of Rights in place because there was a problem with too much power. And everything was written accordingly. But first of all, the Declaration of Independence, which was agreed upon that they had to separate themselves from Britain, And of course, it ended up with Thomas Jefferson writing the paper. And in that process, it became a document that is a covenant between the people and God, ultimately, and a notice to the world of the separation from Britain to become independent with the self-government by the people and for the people. And that is the key part of the whole thing. It's by and for the people, by the consent of the people, not the states, the people. Now, when the Constitution was put together, there was a lot of flaws in that Constitution in the sense that it could be misinterpreted to go all over the place.
But
so they had to bind it down somehow.
And it was. So if you and I are in contract negotiations and we're reading the contract and I say this is what this line means, I perceive that this line means this. And you write down in a letter back to me and say, no, this line means very specifically this. Well, guess what? You've just amended that contract legally, and the ratification debates are legal binding documents under contract law. Even back in those days.
I know people are teaching this, but I disagree with that conclusion. It is far more than that. And you know, look, when this whole thing was put together, and remember, these people who did this whole thing, yeah, they were in colonies, and you know, Jefferson was chosen a couple of times to go, you know, as a legislator in Virginia, and he did it twice, and both times he tried to get rid of slavery, not get rid of slavery, he knew he couldn't do that, but be able to emancipate slaves is what he was pushing for, and then the next step after that, and after that. He eventually became governor of Virginia. Okay, now Virginia now is a free state, and he was a representative of that. But at the time when he negotiated, he wasn't governor, nor was he a legislator. But he was involved with that whole process. Now we have the debates going on. You have the colonies, and it's the people of the colonies that debated this whole thing out. Whether they were representatives of their state in the sense of an official matter, or they were chosen for that process of debate and going through, they had to hammer out a constitution. When the constitution was done, it was sealed. It's a contract, well, not a contract, it's a constitution, and it cannot be changed. It can be added to. Okay, but you cannot change the certain parts of the Constitution. There's the structure of power, the dividing of power. There's an agreement or the division of power on the federal level between, you know, the three branches. You have the judicial, the administrative, and the legislative. But then there's another part to that where there's a separation, which you have the federal government, the states, and the people. And the people sit above all. We the people.
Well, so, to be clear, I don't think we're arguing. I honestly,
calling it a contract is a very dangerous thing.
Technically, it's a compact because there
were
multiple parties.
If you want to call it a compact, I guess you could. Let me see.
There were multiple parties, and in the concept of we the people, it was really we the elite minds of the states, because the people were ignorant. There were only a few players, maybe a hundred in some of the larger states.
Yeah, but it was done on benefit of the people. Well, and they
so,
were
but,
the people,
but it
and
wasn't done by the voice and the power of the democracy of the people.
Well, look, once you make it a contract, it becomes a whole different thing. It no longer becomes a,
absolutely,
a
and that's and to me.
Well, a covenant is much more important. It could never be broken.
Well, so, yeah, absolutely. So a covenant and a contract are interchangeable. Same thing with the Constitution. They use those words interchangeably when they refer to this document.
Again, the Constitution is the law of the land.
Which encompasses, or
actually is encompassed by, or you, either way you want to put it, by the natural law.
But
And Again, I would never use the word contract. I very shy away from it for purposely because, and look at, you know, if you listen to Napolitano talk, and he's a pretty good talker, he has a lot of good points and so on and so forth, but he has major flaws in his thinking that, oh, the Constitution should have said the state. He admits to be a Federalist, and, you know, we don't think about those things these days, but that's where his position is. And a Federalist position is a strong federal government.
So I'm going to take it that you probably haven't read the ratification debates, because in Virginia, Henry kept on poking the Federalist, and Madison finally stood up and says, yeah, it says we the people, but who is it? One collective body? No, we the people of the 13 sovereign states. Those are the parties to this compact.
As long as it's the people.
But the people
the
of
states because play a role. If you look into the Tenth Amendment, the states play a role in the sense that anything that is not in the federal
the constitution. States, but it's the states because the states were sovereign. So in a constitutional, there's two types of constitutions, and I forgive me for going through this. There's a general constitution and an enumerated. We never created a general constitution. What we created was an enumerated constitution to delegate only these powers. And so when the states stepped up, you know, they created these very specific powers to the state government, and the states did the exact same thing to the general government. So we don't have general powers, but the problem has been we've completely drifted away because nobody understood the intent and the definitions and terms of the contract. And those definitions and terms are in the ratification debates. That's why I say those things are legally binding definitions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll look deeper into it. Everything that I can see takes it away from a contract, because a contract is a whole different story. It's a meeting of minds. And the meeting of a mind between the federal government and the people, even though acting through the states, of course, okay, that's where the thing is. The federal government has nothing to say in this agreement. There is no.
We're not arguing. You and I are not arguing.
That's why it's not a contract. We don't have a contract with the federal government.
So whose contract is it? Whose contract is it?
Again, let's call it a constitution for what it is, and we're built upon a trust. That's who we are. There's no. When you get into the contract, again, you get an agreement. Well, who's the contract between them?
It's between the states. And as you aptly pointed to Jefferson, in Jefferson's book on the Notes on the State of Virginia, he clarified very specifically the processes of correcting these social compacts. And now this was in 1783, and this was before the U.S. Constitution, but he talked about two mechanisms, a convention for amending the Virginia contract, and or a convention for dealing with the breaches, but both of them required the parties of the contract. At that point in time, the parties of the contract were the people for the state of Virginia. Now, in 1798, I know you understand this.
I can agree with it being a contract between the states.
Yes.
And then once it's sealed, it's done. Now,
there we go.
There are certain things they cannot change in that Constitution.
Precisely.
But so, there are things that they can add to and make little alternatives.
Okay, so let me give you just a little bit, another nugget then. Now that
but
we
it's
have.
It's important when you say that it's a contract, because my mind always thinks when you're telling me it's a contract, mm-hmm. other people have made these positions that it's a contract, and they always get to the point when we get to the discussion, well, the contract, it's not a contract between we the people and the federal government. They have no part of it. We've created them through this process. And so from that perspective, it's not a contract. But if you want to call it a contract between the states, and it's ultimately a covenant
Because
it's rests upon the law, mm-hmm. the foundation of law, which is declaration. They came together and they put it together as the people. And you're right. Look, all the people couldn't participate. There's no way. I wrote a paper on this. And matter of fact, I think I included some of this into the next paper we're filing, if I recall. But it does get into the details. Look, the people cannot all come together and create this. Most people aren't even capable of making these decisions. So it's done on their behalf right. by the people who are just doing the right thing for themselves and others. So, but again, I'd be careful of using the word contract unless you clarify that it was contracted between the states.
Okay, so this is where the divine hand of providence comes in, because contract law at that point in time was not very mature compared to today. Now, in 1821, when John G. Jackson asked Madison for his notes on the convention, because everybody knew he took these notes, they said, "We want to understand what you gentlemen discussed and what you thought this Constitution meant." And Madison refused to give him his notes, and he told him, "It doesn't matter what my thoughts were or any person in that convention's thoughts were on this Constitution. The only thing that matters is how the states understood it." In other words, how the states were sold on what this Constitution meant. In other words, the ratification debates, all these testimonies of what this Constitution was limited to, the scope and everything else, that's the only thing that mattered regarding the interpretation or understanding the Constitution. So here's the thing. When a contract is being violated, most people think, well, we got to go to court. But there is no court that has jurisdiction over things not delegated. The only court are the states. Now, I'm not, when I talk about this, most people think, oh, this guy might be an Article 5 convention person. No, the states have the authority to enforce their contract per Jefferson's notes on the state of Virginia, as well as the 49th Federalist Papers, as well as the resolutions of Kentucky and Virginia. They clearly stated that the states have the authority and are duty bound to interpose in arresting the evil whenever the general government goes outside the boundaries of the state's compact. And so the process of fixing this huge problem we have is, and I'll just give you the kind of the macro view here, the process is auditing the Constitution against the federal government by the states to identify all the roles, responsibilities, and powers being exercised, as well as powers that have been usurped via the court system, the presidents, and so forth, and then forcing Congress to actually dismantle and decommission all of these unconstitutional powers. Now, I can get into the details on this, but this is where I believe you and your movement is integral, because we start cleaning up the state in the process by using grand juries to go after those people who are committing moral perjury by violating their oath of office. Because the divine hand of providence included, not just in Article 6, that every person, even the Supreme Court, had to take an oath of office, but in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, anybody who violates their oath is to be removed from office. You don't even have to commit treason. All you have to do is not support and defend the Constitution as a legislator or a public servant, and you can be removed and banned for life. And
well, I agree to that, and it is clear, you know, it's war against the Constitution.
Absolutely.
It is treason, it's subversion.
And I believe your grand jury process
has even said that.
Right, and I believe your grand jury process is an integral part in this overall restoration.
Where the people have defined, look at, I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I disagreed with the fact that it was a contract thinking between the states and the people, particularly the people,
I understand,
and federal government. That doesn't exist. The federal government is the creation of a debate and putting together a constitution done by the people of the states.
Right.
And of course, it's all connected. And the balance of power was put in there between the people and the states.
Right.
Because the bottom line, when it comes to courts, anything that's lawful, anything that's legal, anything that has to be decided for in natural law is the job of the 12. And not of any judge or any magistrate. And the judges and the magistrate, they rule in the equity courts, and the people rule in the law courts. And that's the key thing.
Right.
But even in the equity courts, once they move it into a criminal action, then it calls for a grand jury still for an indictment, a trial jury by the people.
Right.
It's a court of law, court of record.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be, of course, using, we'll call it, contract agreements between the individuals of the agencies working, and maybe violating that regulation, which usually regulations are dealt by administrative courts but not law courts. But if they violated statutes and they violated the codes and it injures somebody, then at that point, of course, they pulled in, it moves from equity to law. And the judges still stay out of it. Now, they may be there as the sort of the traffic cop in the court,
right.
But the people have the power of nullification, and we're the lawmakers. We're the sovereign above all, and that
above
must
all,
be
correct.
Key
Absolutely.
And held together all the time.
But there are layers and levels of jurisdiction, and what
yes.
most people don't recognize is the jurisdiction that the states have over all things that the federal government is doing that is not or has not formally been delegated. A great example and
goes back to the states.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, a great example is the Department of Transportation.
Right.
In 1817,
it's a bunch of stuff, but
right,
go ahead.
But historically, in 1817, Congress came to Madison and said, we want to create this bonus bill and we want you to sign this based on this concept of improving our infrastructure for commerce purposes. And as much as Madison wanted to sign that bill, he said that power does not exist within this Constitution. If you want this power, you must amend it. And I'm paraphrasing. So they went back and they were so upset at him because he actually suggested that they create some type of amendment to the Constitution, but that flew over their heads. They thought that they could just legislate. So that's why Madison's memorial is the Library of Congress and not some great edifice. Later, they went to James Monroe in 1822 and said, we want to create this power that would have been the foundation for the Department of Transportation. He vetoed it as well and said, you can't even put these implied powers together to grant this power to you. You must amend the Constitution. Congress not being done, or undone, I should say, they were so adamant in trying to grant themselves this power that in 1830 they went to Andrew Jackson and said, we want to, give us this power in creating this foundation for taxation and road maintenance and so forth. And even he vetoed this bill and said, you must amend the Constitution. Now, three presidents said you couldn't do it, and yet we have a Department of Transportation without an amendment.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah.
And so the whole point is what else do we have without amendments that are clearly, because most people would even look at the Constitution and say, it clearly says post roads. That is a constitutional thing. No way. I've got three presidents that said it isn't. So mm-hmm. anyway, so the whole process is what I call, and it's been labeled as Republic Review in the context that this is an innate power that the states had. When they created this concept of judicial review, that was not an innate power within the Constitution. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court was a very passive body. They did not have the ability to pursue cases. The cases had to come up to them within
Correct.
Their jurisdiction. And now, this whole lines of jurisdictions, everybody believes that the Supreme Court has jurisdiction over everything. And the ratification debates clearly state, and even John Marshall said, that if a law is passed that is not within or pursuant to the enumerated powers, the Supreme Court would consider it void and a violation of the Constitution. And so all of these things within the ratification debates are all harmonizing this whole concept that the federal government was granted these very specific powers for a very specific purpose, for the tranquility and peace of the Union in protecting us, and that we would be able to have the ability to harmonize as a state, as the states within this republic. And so anyway, I'm not here to get you on board with Republic Review.
I'm learning some stuff here because I've never researched into these things, especially these debates or arguments concerning the changes with legislators. And the legislators continue to think that they can make these changes without going to the Constitution and making a constitutional amendment. And of course, it's a very difficult thing to do. But the main thing that I have discovered in the power and the authority of the Constitution is the structure, how would I say this, the dividing of powers, shall I say, which is the key part of this whole thing. But also, again, it's not only between the three branches, it's also between the federal government, the states, and the people.
Right.
And when it comes to, and all of this is overruled by the people whenever they will it, through nullification. And generally speaking, anything that violates the unalienable rights, and that's the key part, that is the part that really protects us, is if we understand that they did something that violates an unalienable right, like going to get a driver's license or getting a Social Security number, or a lot of different things that they do, This then is of course a violation of the Constitution.
Right, absolutely.
And, there is no authority for
correct.
Any of this. So I kind of see, and I agree. This is
correct.
So, of course, but again, with the word contract,
yes.
if you want to say that it's contractual between the states, I can kind of agree with that.
Okay.
But not between the states and the federal government. The federal government is the creation of that paper.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. So. So here's an interesting thing because
and I'm really glad that our founding fathers wrote "We the People" and not "We the States" because
do you
the
know
states,
that was a style change, right?
Huh?
You know that was a style change.
I'm not aware of the change.
Within the very last couple, within the very last couple of days of the Constitutional Convention, it actually read "We the People of the State of Boom" and the State of Boom, and it literally listed all 13 states. And then they removed that and just said, "We the People," as a style change. That's why Madison had to correct Henry to say, this is not a democracy. This is actually a level of sovereignties of the states over this, as well as their party to the people in the fact that they were established by the people.
And again, the states are representatives
correct.
Of the people, and the people
yes.
are the
just like the counties, as you
sure.
which
but
is
nevertheless,
yeah,
I'm
correct.
Very glad that it was written "We the People" and left in that way. It doesn't make us a democracy, not at all, because it makes us a people of law. We the people, in order to establish a more perfect union, et cetera,
correct.
You know, ordained and established. So who can ordain but the people? Because they're the highest sovereign, other than God, of course.
Right. So one of the two things I wanted to point out, but first off, on this "We the People" thing, I have asked people, and as a matter of fact, the "We the People" concept has actually promoted this concept of democracy, one person, one vote, and so forth. And so it's been perverted. It's been used as this perversion, just like the four mystical clauses of the Supremacy Clause, the Necessary Proper Clause, the General Welfare or General Defense and Welfare Clause, and the Commerce Clause. Those clauses have been used to self-aggrandize as long as it's only within the framework of the Constitution. The only way you understand that those things are not applied in the way we're being sold and taught is by reading the ratification debates, because they did clarify all of this.
But well, let me ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Now, this is your radio station. It runs off the web, and does it run on the other?
Oh, actually, we're on like Cleveland, and we're on some different radios. It's like 300 different stations around the world.
Well, how would I get you on the web if I wanted to?
Well, I'll send you the link and all of that. And as a matter of fact, I'll send you my email.
Yeah,
and all
I
that.
Think I can learn a lot, because there's things here that I'm not aware of that you're talking about and I haven't researched into. So it's fascinating to me. Today, what we're going to talk about, basically the things that I'm very strong on understanding.
Absolutely. And that's why I want you on, because my audience needs to understand the integral role that the grand jury actually provides. One other thing I wanted to bring up is because I actually have studied this nullification concept. Nullification was a second nature reaction to something unlawful. In other words, as soon as somebody realized, all they had to do is make the connection that this was an unlawful law, or that there was no basis or jurisdiction behind this, it was nullified automatically. They didn't even have to go through a process of having to have a court or a discussion. It was noted, and they instantly nullified. The court would
absolutely
nullify.
Even the United States Supreme Court, when it was real, I guess,
correct.
You know, agreed on that it was as if it never existed.
Correct. So nullification, to me, the way I explain it to people is it's a second nature thing. When somebody swings at you, the second nature response is you duck. And the second nature thing is, when something is unlawful, it is just nullified, because it is acknowledged that you can't create and enforce an unconstitutional or a violation of the law. Mm-hmm. Anywho, so
all right. So now when you're on the radio, these are the things you're pretty much discussing.
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact,
you have an audience that understands certain things already.
So I'm reading the ratification. I can say that again.
This is good.
I read the ratification debates to my audience. Absolutely. And so they have a pretty good, profound understanding. I don't have the typical, you know, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh type of automatons that just, you know, love the great sound bites that make them feel good. I'm here to empower people. And so what we need to do is we need to have a little bit of silence. So I'm going to turn your volume down for just 3 seconds, and then I'll bring you back in and introduce you. And that's how we'll move forward with the interview, because I'm going to let you go ahead and give everybody the background on your organization. Take as much time as you need. We just need to break these things up into 40-minute segments, okay?
Okay, and if I refer to you, I refer to you as GR.
As
right?
GR, correct.
Okay, got it.
As you might understand, as this plan moves forward, we are going to break all the strings and the controls that the globalist elitists have on us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But people need to be doing their job as Trump is doing his.
Therefore, that's why I go by GR.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much. I'm going to silence you, and I'll bring you right back in. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so that gives you a background of our initial conversation. This is the first time we ever spoke. And so as I, you know, and I don't necessarily record the front end or the back end for any type of purpose, but because we actually just didn't have a chance to talk about the process of how I was going to be recording, taking pauses and so forth, you kind of saw a little peek behind the curtain, but I think that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I do not do edited interviews. I do raw interviews. As you know, there's no need to be polished here. We are just having a honest and direct dialogue regarding facts. And so this was our conversation. I think you kind of understand where we're going with this. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to give you some insights regarding John Durash. And I think the best way to give you insight is to give you how the enemy looks at him first. Because anybody that makes it to the Southern Poverty Law Center and is considered an enemy by them, I am telling you that is a friend of liberty. So anyway, this is their article. But in order to be successful, quote unquote, the group declares, quote, "We must first seek the blessings from the governor of the universe and build our endeavor upon him and his principles, his justice and mercy. This is the only sure foundation. Any other will succumb to tyrants. The common law grand juries are," that was close quote there, "the common law grand juries are a scheme right out of the playbook of sovereign citizens who will be the most federal laws don't, who believe that federal laws don't apply to them." If you understand, and I tried to differentiate these, the ADL, the NLA, the National Liberty Alliance, does not go down that path. They're creating this juncture, like they're the same people. The NLA is not a defeatist or an organization that takes good people and gets them out and has them check out and no longer be in the system. Anyway. The Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, calls Darash a sovereign citizen guru trying to establish vigilante grand juries. Darash, however, claims not to be a sovereign citizen, a term he told the South Carolina newspaper that is alien to us, quote unquote. But as a variation on the old saying goes, if it flies frivolous lawsuits and leans like sovereign citizen and throws around meaningless indictments like a sovereign citizen and makes outlandish monetary demands on the government like a sovereign, it's a blank. In Florida, in January, according to the ADL, a common law grand jury or a CLGJ, they're trying to create an acronym for that, Common Law Grand Jury, sent a writ of mandamus to the officials of one county demanding a budget of $1.5 million office space and equipment. That document was followed up in February with a notice of demand warning county officials that the earlier demand was not optional. I want you to understand, you do, and we do have constitutional rights, and we do have a mechanism called the grand jury, the citizens' grand jury. I've engaged with other people regarding this, and there's actually a lot of different efforts as will come up in this conversation. Actually, it doesn't come up in this conversation, it comes up in a private conversation where I asked if he was associated with some people in Georgia that I was working with as well. Bottom line, friends, I am here to tell you that the common law grand jury is a mechanism that we need to actually bring back. The two people, as I understand through this conversation, and as we're growing, because I'd like to have John back after we go through the initial interview, I want you to understand who the key components are regarding the grand jury. Obviously, it's the citizens of the county, but there has to be administrators and there has to be some budget. Now, I think that the Southern Poverty Law Center was, you know, quoting that they needed a $1.5 million office space and equipment, but there's no reason why the money can't be and the budget requirements can't be addressed and actually disclosed and discovered and disclosed by the county commissioners in your particular county. Make them actually go down this path of creating that office space and actually creating the legitimacy. The problem is, and the problem we're finding, is that people don't understand these things. They're completely illiterate, just like regarding the Constitution. So we're hoping that you, as you start learning that this isn't a one-trick pony. This isn't, get-rich-quick scheme. What we have are very specific things that we have to reinstitute that is a part of our culture that has been completely washed out. And as a matter of fact, just recently, I think it was either today or it's happening now, that Virginia is actually passing laws to whitewash, and I don't want to use that term in a racial context, but they want to whitewash the history of Virginia to remove any type of Confederate memorial, Confederate monument, or anything like that. Anyway, if it offends you, then they want to get rid of it. Well, so if you go to, let me tell you this, I will put this up. If it's not on today, by the end of today, then it will be up very soon. We will have a link to the National Liberty Alliance. They have a lot of really good information. Now, they do have some founding documents and some other things. If you kind of look at their website, I hope that you take the time to start getting smart on this. We're going to, like I said, we're going to bring in a person that works with the National Liberty Alliance called the Common Law Lawyer, or I should say Brent Winters, who is known as a subject matter expert on common law. And why is common law important? Well, you noticed when I talked about the ratification debates that the Constitution did not instill common law. It wasn't instilled until the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights actually dictates that certain things must be done according to common law. Now, that doesn't mean a state is forced to have common law, but all states except for Louisiana has implemented common law, and over the perversion of corporations and so forth, we've moved down towards a admiralty, not admiralty, what do they call that? Basically, it's like we've moved down this path of corporate or civil law, where you do not have inalienable rights with the court. And there have been many courts that have you kind of wondered, well, why is it that the court that was trying the Bundys, didn't even acknowledge the Constitution and constitutional limitations until it was really thrown in their face? I've asked one question, and I think that this is one of the things that we need to do discovery on. How many states have dictated the common law shall be the law of the state? If that's not the case, then there is one thing, another reason why, not just one thing, another reason why counties need to call for a constitutional convention in their state to clean up your state government, to get it back into the framework of what you want them to do, and that you want them to acknowledge your individual rights. We're at that precipice, friends, where even states have taken the paradigm that you are their minions, you are their slaves, and they're the administrators for the global governance of communism. That same thing with our federal government, that it's all becoming administrations of managing you, the subject. I can't tell you how close we are to the greatest peril known to the history of mankind. There has never been a play tried or attempted to enslave the entire world. Now, there have been societies that have been enslaved, while others have, you know, been able to languish and, you know, in whatever their problems or whatever their solutions have been. We're here to tell you, my friends, that we have an opportunity, and if you want to get involved, email us, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, or just call us, 425-270-5416. With that, we will be back tomorrow with a full, or the first section, the first segment of this good interview with John Durash. So anyway, I'm hoping that you enjoyed this. And after this, we will get into actually the need to know news. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.